This is lovely. It's an exclusive now.
Right?
You can't say this to any other journalist.
I won't.
Now.
I shan't. I haven't.
Wonderful.
So,
perfect. Hello, and welcome to Spieling the Beans with me, Dom Stevens, the storytelling podcast in which storytellers tell their stories about telling stories. We clearly get paid for each use of the word story in that bio. My guest this week is perhaps best known for BBC Two's The MASH Report, in particular her sketches about the Irish border and immigrants, as well as appearances on Comedy Central's Roast Battle, 8 out of 10 Cats, John Richardson's Ultimate Warrior, and the Guilty Feminist podcast. Last year, a lady in a yellow jumper came to her show and didn't have a good time. When my guest mentioned she was bisexual during the set, the yellow cardigan woman was particularly offended and was later heard describing her as, quote, disgusting. This awful moment was a large part of the motivation behind my guest's new show, Lemon, one of the funniest and most beautifully crafted hours of stand-up that I have ever seen. The performance I saw was actually attended by Jess Phillips MP, one of my guest's heroes, and the electricity in seeing a comedian perform for an idol who was clearly a big fan right back at them was phenomenal. We spoke about narrative in comedy, Moby Dick, and the importance of all the Mr. Murphys out there. And we spoke in a room which had an automatic door which led into a cafe, hence the waves of ambient noise that drift in at various points. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome my guest for this week, Catherine Bohart. Catherine, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Now, I was going to start by talking about if there was a particular teacher that inspired you when you were younger.
Absolutely.
And then I discovered that there was a particular debating teacher. Mr. Murphy, was it?
Yes, that's crazy that you know that. Yes, we follow each other on Twitter. He's still the best guy I ever met in school. He was an amazing teacher who just cared an awful lot and organized single-handedly a debate every lunchtime so that people like me had somewhere to be at lunchtime. And he just completely informed my perspective on generating argument and speaking and feeling like my voice was worth being listened to. And I mean, in many ways, he defined my whole schooling, but also my time at university, because debating was how I made friends and how I traveled the world. And it's definitely, I think there's a complete crossover between it and comedy. There's a lot of debaters who are now comedians, actually. Dara O'Brien and Nish Kumar being two I can think of. Mm. But, yeah, Mr. Murphy was just, I didn't realise at the time what I was being trained for, but it's all his fault.
Well, I hope you've blamed him accordingly.
Oh, every time I see him, I get a weirdly teary, and I think he's, like, just trying to get in with my groceries. And I'm like, remember when you helped me so much? Okay, have a great day. I'm a big fan.
It makes a teacher's job worth doing.
I hope so. I hope he knows that he's appreciated, even though I probably wasn't appreciative at the time. I was probably just like, ugh, fine, more debating. Actually, that's not true. I was so keen. But yeah.
Fantastic. Now, you've just come off stage from your brand new show, Lemon, which, as I said before, is one of the best shows I've seen on The Fringe. And that's just not me saying this because I've got eyeline with you right now, and it'd be awkward if I said it was terrible. It's genuinely fantastic, and I hope you tour it soon because more people need to see it.
Thank you. I am going to tour it.
Oh, brilliant.
I start in Soho at the end of September, and then I have dates in Dublin and all over the UK. So I'm really excited, but I'm really proud of it. I think it's more fun than last year's show. It's sillier, and it feels more like me. I feel like I'm couching less and just expressing my opinion and, you know, sitting in it a bit more. But also, there's no two ways around it. Like, you just are better a year after of a year gigging, you know. And your first show is so important, but it's really where you unlearn a lot of bad habits and hopefully learn how to write a show. But I thank you for saying that. I'm proud of it.
Oh, well, you should be.
Thank you.
And what I particularly love is how you managed to weave narrative arcs of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, your thoughts on gender and your sex life in a big soup.
Yeah. How
do you approach writing a show? Where do you start from? What is your process of compiling that?
Well, I should say, I mean, I can only speak to 1 year, really, because it's this year I wrote it in 11 months, which I'll have to do from now on, obviously, from last year. The year before, it was more like a collation of things that I had, sort of the greatest hits, I suppose, for the 3 years before. Can you have greatest hits when you're learning to be a comic? No, probably not. We should need a better phrase. But I'm really lucky. I do two things. I tend to write on stage an awful lot. That's how I come up with most of my stuff. I'll write a few ideas on a piece of paper and then talk them out on stage. Not in gigs that matter, let's be clear. And then I have a wonderful director, which I know sounds bad to say, like, as in, I know sometimes people are like, we don't want to hear about your director, like, but I have a sounding board and he helps me so much. Also, my best friend Georgie, who gets a mention in the show, mm-hmm. is that poor woman has had to listen to so much bad material so that I haven't had to say it on stage. So I have, and Sarah, my partner, we bounce things off each other a lot. So I have three people who I can test material on, either before I've done it on stage or after, and who sort of, this year it was very much, I wrote stand-up in bits, like I wrote 5-minute bits, 3-minute bits, and then at Christmas sort of went, huh, these all seem, I'm clearly thinking about something, that thing, whether it's perceptions of queer women or gender identity in relationships or just, you know, vag jokes. They're all in the same ballpark. What else do I think about that? Mm-hmm. But it wasn't as prescriptive as, I'm going to write a show about this. And actually, when I wrote the start of the show, it didn't have any context. And I wrote it and I tried it a few times and it didn't work at all. Because people were like, uh-huh, mm-hmm. so? Whereas now in the story it makes sense. Which would only make sense if you heard the show. So I'm sorry, what a terrible story.
No.
Storytelling. My job. You wouldn't think it, but there it is.
Now, one thing I did want to ask was the title Lemon. Mm-hmm. Does that come from... This is like inside baseball, but you need to see the show anyway, so this is a hit to go and see it. Is that based on the ladies' jumper?
Yes.
Okay.
Originally, it was based on that, and then on her cardigan, and then a bunch of things kind of coalesced to make me think it was the right title, because I was thinking about that as the show title. And then an Australian friend of mine told me that it's a pejorative for lesbian in Australia. They'll say lemon a lot. And then I found out that in fan fiction, apparently, what a surprise, I'm not a big reader, they'll put this thing in fan fiction where they'll say lots of lemons coming up, and it means that sex scenes are coming up.
Right.
And I was like, this is meant to be. It's great. And I mean, who reads fanfic if not for the sex? But okay. And then somebody else said it kind of feels like, because the show is a little bit about her feeling like she was sold a lemon. So, yeah, then it was like, this is the one.
This is fate.
And then classic comedy fate, somebody else called their show Lemon too. And I was no. Yeah, but
are they like, at the fringe?
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
I didn't know it was about to happen. It was a nightmare. But it's been fine. And so that's how it came about. But I quite like that people wonder if that's what it is, but they're not sure. It's not just, I mean, it could just as easily be because I sound quite bitter in the show.
It's just got so many, it's like an English lit cast.
Oh, thank you.
You're very welcome. This is lovely, it's an exclusive now.
Right?
You can't say this to any other journalist.
I won't,
now.
I shan't, I haven't.
Wonderful,
so
perfect. You're perhaps best known at the moment for The MASH Report,
yes.
Of which I'm a huge fan.
Thank you.
It seems
Me
like,
too, I love it as a show.
It's really good, and it seems like finally the UK has an equivalent of The Daily Show.
I know, it's taken a while.
Yeah.
I think... The part of the reason that it's so good, certainly why it's been so good for me, is the producers on that show are so willing to let the talent lead the material and also to let you fail. Here's another exclusive.
Yeah.
I made two videos for them before that we didn't put on air. And they were just like, okay, let's go again. Let's try something else. And we're completely like, yeah, that was all of us. We all decided a thing. It didn't work. Let's try again. And I don't think there are many television shows who would take a punt on a new female act doing political comedy and let me try and fail that many times.
Yeah.
I think I'll be eternally grateful to them because they really helped me. And now, consequently, the stuff that has gone out, I've been really proud of, which is nice.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah.
So what is the writing process for the MASH Report?
So you tend to decide the topic. So we'll generally pick an area that we want to talk about and that I would probably be better on than somebody else. Mm-hmm. And then we'll wait to see how the news pans out. And then you go in on... I'll go in on a Monday and a Tuesday with two other writers, or maybe one other writer, depending on the situation. And then like the immigration one, Ahir Shah and I wrote together. And the Northern Irish one, Georgie, my friend Georgie, and I wrote together with Ed Knight. And so that'll be two full days of writing. And then the editorial team will go, that would be 7 hours long, Catherine. And I go, I'm sorry, how long are sketches meant to be? They'll cut it all. And then we will have another glance at it, and then we'll film the VT on the Thursday. And then the following week, on the Wednesday, I think, or the Thursday it is, I'll be in studio to do that bit. Awesome. So it's a pretty quick turnaround.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, you write Monday and Tuesday, you film the VT, which you're pretty much locked into on Thursday. So if the news changes massively...
Yes. Fortunately, very stable political climate right now.
Very consistent, terrible mess.
Yes.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
But no, it's awful. So yeah, that's it.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. Was either Georgie or Ed Derek in the puppet?
No, they both made strong cases as to why they should be, but it turns out they wanted to use a professional puppeteer.
Well, where's the fun in
a
that?
A great shame. Crying shame.
I think it's cinema's loss.
Right?
Yeah.
I think Ed Knight would be a phenomenal puppet, as he said, over and over and over again.
I believe that's his answer phone message.
Yeah, 100%.
Ed Knight, wannabe puppeteer.
Yep.
Please leave at the beep.
Yep.
I know you've got to rush off to soak up the rest of the Fringe.
I'm going
to
go see a show, yeah.
What are you going to see now?
I'm going to go see London Hughes, who I've never seen before. And I've seen Mickey Overman, who was amazing, and Lisa Traeger was amazing. And last night I saw Guy Montgomery. All great shows. I haven't had a dud yet, so I'm excited.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, I just have two very quick questions.
Go ahead.
First one is, part A and B, what is the best advice you've received about comedy? What is the worst advice you've received about comedy?
The best advice is that it's not a zero-sum game. Until everyone in the world is watching comedy on the reg, which they're not, there is audience enough for all of us. And so we're not in competition with one another. And I think that's very easy to forget and genuinely important to remember. The worst advice... I would say that's a good question. What's the worst advice I've ever gotten?
And of course you need to name names as to...
No, I can't even think of the worst advice I've ever gotten. I think, that's what it is. I think people rush to tell female comics what they shouldn't be talking about a lot of the time. Like, nobody wants to hear that from a woman. You know, whether it's like... I do some stuff about body positivity in my show, or whether it's like period jokes or sex jokes. I mean, people always have an opinion. And I think, but the idea of like conflating it with your gender as though that's what makes it unpalatable, I always find to be particularly pernicious and usually completely wrong, because actually women consume comedy too and they love that stuff. And also that's not all women do, which I should have said first. And also... if you think I shouldn't say something because I'm a woman, we need to go back several steps because there's a bigger issue at hand. Yeah.
I entirely agree. Yeah. Entirely agree. My final question is simply, how important is story in comedy? Or narrative in comedy?
I think it's important. I think there's a weird tendency to make us choose between the two, right? That like people will say like that person just does jokes and that person does stories, but actually the best shows, to my mind, have always done both. And I don't think that story undermines the funny. Some of my favorite comics, Sarah Kendall, Ahir Shah, Steen Raskopoulos, Nish. There's so many people who do incredible. Narratives within shows, and actually my view is people want to feel something. You've gotten up there, especially here, it's not like in a club where you're doing 15 minutes, you have talked at them for an hour. They want to know what you think about it. They want to know why it matters to you, and if it doesn't matter to you, why on earth would it matter to them? So I think people like narrative, and I think that it makes the show feel more engaging, and I think that it makes me feel like it's worthwhile. I think it's hugely valuable, especially because I think stand-up is the kind of thing that can... It takes down people's... it removes people's inhibitions because you have them laughing. And so it's a really prime opportunity to use story to create empathy, I think. And I think it's vital. And I'm not going to apologise for that opinion. Every part of my body goes, it's like, but it'll still be funny. Which of course it will be, because you said in comedy. So I don't need to make that clear. Yeah.
I was talking solely about the book Moby Dick, so I don't know where you...
Oh, sure. Yeah. A classic comedy. Yes. A rom-com, if anything.
The original picture.
Yes.
Catherine, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. So nice to talk to you.
Likewise.
Great questions.
Thank you.